I'd like now to welcome Dick Stolle. He was an editor at Life magazine when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated, and he acquired the Abraham Zapruder film, which showed the entire shooting. This Friday at 7 o'clock at the Lenzic, there will be a special event, free and open to the public, on the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination, called From Zapruder to Taksim Square, Media and Culture in the 21st Century. There will be a screening of the documentary Zapruder and Stolle, Witness to an Assassination, followed by a panel discussion on how the way we get our news has changed since 1963. Welcome, Dick Stolle, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
So, you were the journalist who brought the Abraham Zapruder film, the only film that shows the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Do you remember what it was like when you first saw that film?
I should say it's the only film that shows it from beginning to end. There were about 24 photographers out there in Dealey Plaza that day, but they both, a couple of cinematographers and the rest still, they simply got moments. Mr. Zapruder got it from beginning to end, and that was the dramatic impact. Watching that, we all knew what had happened the day before, but we had no idea what it looked like. And suddenly we did. The headshot, the infamous frame 313, is just devastating. I've seen that film, Mary Charlotte, maybe 100 times, and I still get this thump in my heart every time I see that particular frame.
Yeah. There's a new book published by Life magazine called The Day Kennedy Died, and it shows every frame of the film, and some of them it blows up and really talks about the frames, including the one you just mentioned. Some of that film seemed or was deemed too graphic to publish at the time. How do you think Americans' responses to violence, real violence, not TV violence, have changed over these decades?
There have been reports that Mr. Zapruder asked me to ask Life magazine not to run that particular frame, which is not true. He asked that the film not be exploited, but he never mentioned specifically not running the frame. Life magazine decided not to, out of deference to the Kennedy family, not out of deference to Mr. Zapruder. Quite frankly, if the decision had been mine, I think I would have run that frame. And I think the American people needed to see the true violence that was visited on President Kennedy that day. Today, I don't think there would be any question that it would be, well, first of all, it would not find its way into print first, Lord knows, and it would be shown online first and then on television, and I am utterly convinced that particular sequence, that grisly sequence, would be shown again and again and again.
Yeah. I remember, part of the reason I'm asking this is I remember on 9/11, like every other American, turning on the television and seeing this over and over again, the planes going into the World Trade Center, and having this deep shock in my heart and soul, and thinking, even at the time, but particularly afterwards, how interesting it is in a way that we've all seen so many horrific, violent movies, but when it's real, it's completely different.
It does. The human psyche or brain or whatever makes that distinction just instantaneously. And when you see, your heart may thump when you're seeing it in a movie. As you say, your heart sinks when you see it in real life.
So the grief that the United States experienced as a nation at that time brought people together in a way that cut across race and class. And there's a moving piece in this new book by Maya Angelou, who's somebody I admire very much. And she felt the loss very sharply, even as she was critical of the United States in her work and was working with a kind of anti-American publication. And you know, this was a time of horrifying racism and lynchings and Jim Crow. And yet there was a kind of mourning that was perhaps like nothing we've ever seen since. How do you understand that?
Well, first of all, I've tried to understand it because I didn't share it. I mean, I was hard at work in along with a lot of other journalists in Dallas during that awful 4 days. And as journalists do, you just park your emotions somewhere in the back of your mind or somewhere in your pocket. And I didn't watch much of the funeral. When I wrote I have a long 7,000-word piece in the book, The Day Kennedy Died. And in writing that, in researching it, going back over material that I hadn't looked at for years, in a very kind of interesting and poignant way, I began to understand and to share in the grief that America experienced. I mean, just from coast to coast. At the time, I observed it, reported on it, we photographed it, but I didn't feel it. And now I do, and I realize that what Maya Angelou is talking about, we got about 20 or 30 prominent Americans and some overseas to tell us where they were when they heard the news of Kennedy's death. And that was her memory of it. And everybody who was watching television during that period speaks of the tears that sprang, but people who were in students in school then talk about teachers bursting into tears in classrooms. Why that happened? It was a different time. He was an icon. He was young. He was handsome. He had this extraordinarily beautiful family, and the suddenness of it. In many ways, we weren't not inured to violence then the way we are now, and the single violence killing this young president struck Americans in a way that, quite frankly, I don't think would strike them that way again.
I feel the same way, and yet I think about that time, and, you know, we were inured to violence, and yet people saw lynchings. I mean, it was not a peaceful time.
They didn't see them taking place. They saw pictures afterwards. There was something about seeing the Zapruder film and literally seeing the president die. And I think there's a major difference in seeing it happen and seeing it after it happened. This is in no way, I reported out of the South for life for 4 years, so I'm well aware of the atrocities committed in the South during that period. And also, this was not a stranger who died before our eyes. Everybody felt they sort of knew Kennedy because he was so open in many ways with his life and his family life. And this was a handsome young friend who died before our eyes.
This was a time when Kennedy was assassinated 50 years ago, when there were a few publications like Life magazine and a few TV news shows that virtually everybody watched or read, and there was a common narrative. Now we have a more fragmentary kind of a mosaic of news. How do you think that affects the way Americans understand current events?
Well, certainly you described what it was like back then. Absolutely. Three networks, that's all. Newspapers weren't national newspapers the way they are now. Much of America depended on Life magazine. Look, magazine to some extent, but Life much more so, to tell them what the world looked like. And people, you know, ran to the mailbox every Friday to be the first to get Life and see what was happening. It was much simpler. I mean, how we learned what was happening in the world, we had limited ways of doing it, three networks and Life. And that created what you've just described as a kind of universality of feeling in America, that because we were getting our news and our photographs and images from pretty much the same place, we all reacted in pretty much the same way. Now, today, of course, could not be more different.
And it's interesting because there are advantages, I suppose, and disadvantages to each of those modes. I mean, in the current day, we have access to much more information, many more points of view, much more reporting, and yet we're far less unified.
Well, I think the fact that we depend on so many sources means that kind of the unification that once existed is does not exist, and I don't think can. In many ways, of course, we're better informed now than we were then because of all the points of view you've just described. In many ways, also, because of all these different sources of information and images and all the rest, we are a splintered country in a way we were not then. And I don't see, quite frankly, there's ever a way that that could be restored. As I said, God forbid, but if a president were to be assassinated on the street of a major American city, it would be a huge event. Instead of one Zapruder film, there would be 400 smartphone images out there. First of all, I think there would be no more unanimity on how this all happened, who was responsible, than there was back then. And I mean, that was a time that it sounds kind of dumb to say so, a simpler time, and there's no way, in my view, that we're ever going to recapture that. We have to, well, I mean, the political splintering of this country is an example. And I think America somehow has to figure out a way to feel unified again. And I don't know whether a human being can do that, whether an issue can do it, whether war could. I don't know, but we certainly do not have it now.
I remember the day of Obama's inauguration very well, and it was 48 years to the day after Kennedy's inauguration. And there he was, this brilliant, handsome man with a beautiful wife and young family, going into the White House. And there were comparisons that were made all the time, but it seems like, I mean, when Kennedy was in office and his family was there and they were in Life magazine and their images were so vivid to the American people, it was almost like Americans accepted that this was like our version of royalty, and that's way far gone as well. Nobody's really doing that to the Obamas, and sometimes very much on the contrary.
Well, not doing it with the Obamas, and they haven't done it with any president since Kennedy.
Right.
They certainly didn't do it with Lyndon Johnson. And Kennedy was young, he was handsome, he was unique. I mean, in some ways, it seems almost, looking back, almost inevitable that this period in American life should end badly. I mean, think back, what if this had never happened? What if he'd gone on to a second term, gotten a little older in office, some of his... the bills that he proposed in the first 3 years probably would have passed. Maybe he wasn't that skillful in manipulating Congress, certainly nowhere near what Lyndon Johnson was a few years later. The Kennedy impact on American life, and I almost hesitate to say this, is stronger because of the 3 years and his death by assassination than it would have been if he had spent 8 years in the White House and managed to get some of those bills passed. I do not think he would be as remembered today if his death had not occurred the way it did and so early.
We're talking to Dick Stolle. Now, in this special edition, in this book called The Day Kennedy Died, 50 Years Later, Life Remembers the Man and the Moment, there is a reprint of the original Life magazine from November 29th, 1963, and going through this magazine, it's such a time capsule into what life was like at that time. Not only the journalism about Kennedy, but all the advertisements for margarine and televisions and things like that that are in this publication. What was it like for you as a journalist who was there, who put it together, to revisit this magazine 50 years later?
Well, I mean, it is kind of amazing. I mean, first of all, the fact that we could to attach it to the back cover and bring it to people, and looking through that, I mean, I was struck the same way you were. I mean, I remembered the stories. What I didn't remember were the other stories. I mean, we couldn't replace all the editorial material with Kennedy stuff. So there are other stories in there that looked just unbelievably dated, and the advertising. It almost made me laugh, some of the ads. And so much was in black and white. We live in a color world now. And I think the decision to include that was a real stroke of genius. I'm not the editor, so I can brag on the book. It was a wonderful thing to do, particularly for older Americans, to remind them not only of that awful November 22nd, but what the rest of the country was doing, was reading, was buying at that point. And in some ways, the 50 years have passed very swiftly. But looking back there, my God, it seems as if that was centuries ago.
Very much so. I mean, it reminds you of the TV program Mad Men. It's really that era.
Right. Well, so, that's interesting. At Mad Men, they use the Time and Life building where I am at this particular moment in New York. Mad Men offices were in the Time and Life building.
Right, right. Now, we'll be talking on Friday night in the panel discussion about images. And as you say, if something like this happened today, which of course would be less likely because security is so much tighter, but anytime a public event happens, there are people making films that are the equivalent of the Zapruder film, and there are dozens of them or even hundreds of them because everyone's got their cell phones going. And sometimes they give us real information that we wouldn't otherwise have, whether they're from protests or war zones or, like, I remember that story about the person who took a photo with their phone of the spider that bit their friend, gave it to the doctors, the person got the correct antidote and lived the moment they got to the hospital. So we've got this explosion of images, for better or worse. Do you see a downside to the explosion of images that we're living with today?
I think the only downside is when we try, if we accept the images for what they are, they're giving us information, sometimes information we don't need, perhaps, but often very helpful, useful, knowledgeable, and all the rest. It worries me sometimes at the plethora of images. I mean, for instance, the Zapruder film itself, I think, is the best argument for a single shooter, the Lee Harvey Oswald theory, and at the same time, the best argument for a conspiracy theory. I mean, there's things that happen in that film that you have to be explained after you see it. Now, if there were 400 or 500 iPhones out there aiming at the limousine when that happened, I think of all the images that we would get, some moving, some still, and it occurs to me that I'm not so sure we'd be any closer to the truth of what happened with all those images than we are now with this single piece of 8mm film.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm sure there are, I mean, that's a long discussion and an interesting argument, but it's a wonderful documentary that we will be seeing on Friday night at the Lenzic. It's at 7 o'clock. The documentary is called Zapruder and Stolle, Witness to an Assassination, and that will be followed by a panel discussion on how the way we get our news has changed between 1963 and the present. So we look forward to seeing you, Dick Stolle, at the Lenzic on Friday night, and thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
I look forward to seeing you there too, Marcella. Thank you very much.